Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Guided Disruption in the Workplace. Today's episode is about a concept we don't often associate with business resilience. Today's episode is about hope. My guest is Dr. Tovar Bakalash, a social psychologist, neuromarketing researcher, and an expert in consumer behavior. Hi, Tomer.
Hey.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Let's start with the foundation. What is hope? What is hope in the leadership context? And how is it different from just being optimistic or staying positive?
It's funny because you say hope and optimism. Sometimes we get mixed up with those different words. Being optimistic is about hoping for tomorrow. Okay? Being optimistic is believing that tomorrow will be better than today. Being hopeful is based on optimism. Is believing that tomorrow will be better than today, but I have a way, I have a plan, I have a goal, I have the ability to reach that goal. And actually, we as psychologists, we don't know much about hope psychology. The first one is Rick Snyder, who actually started to build the hope psychology. And he said that hope is based on three main constructs. The first one is goals. Okay, we have to have concrete goals that we aim to. These goals must be measurable. They must be reachable. They must be realistic. And most importantly, they must be relevant to the situation. The second one is the pathway in which we can get this goal. Pathways can be very different from one person to another, from one company to another, from one nation to another. But hopeful people or hopeful companies or hopeful countries, they can take different routes. They can go in the pathways, and if they get blocked, they go in another pathway. The third one is what he called agency. Agency, it's like the ability to get there. So hope is very much different from optimism because it's a working plan.
So in a way, it's like more associated with the business world, although we don't often speak about hope in the business world, right? Because measurable goals with the pathways, and these are things that we actually do in the business world.
Exactly. And maybe that's because we call it a business world. It's all based on business. It's not based on people. But after all, behind all the numbers and all the Excels and all the data, there are people there. And people are full of hopes, that's full of dreams, full of ways to get there. And the ability, the agency to be what they dream to be.
So you said hope is like a muscle when we spoke recently, something that we can build. What are some of the ways that leaders, we speak about leaders in different companies or organizations or nations, in what way can they train themselves and their team to lead with more hope?
That's something very important because the notion that we understand that hope is like a muscle says that hope is not a talent. You are not born with hope. Hope is a skill. You work on your hope.
So you can attain it.
You can attain it. That's the story of hope, okay? So it's not a talent. It's a skill. We can work on that. There's a nice article that says, how can we develop hope in 90 minutes, okay? And what they did there is something very basic, and each one of your managers can do that. Each one of the workers can do that. What they said is you have to set goals, like we said before. Rick Snyder, right? You have to have concrete goals. So you just write down on the top of the paper your goal for the next 6 months, let's say. Okay, so you have a concrete goal right in front of your eyes. Then you have to write three landmarks on your way to this goal. Let's say your goal is to get in shape. Okay, so my three landmarks is to get sign up for the gym or run 5 kilometers a day or lose some weight. Okay, then you have to write down your obstacles on your way to these challenges, on your way to the landmark.
For example, to actually get out of bed for the gym.
Exactly. Oh, I don't have any money to get sign up for the gym. Now, the obstacles can be one or two. Okay, they can be internal. I don't get up in the morning. I cannot get out of bed. That's something that has to do with me.
Yeah,
that's
intrinsic.
Internal, right?
Yeah.
Intrinsic motivation. The other one has to be external. Okay, I don't have enough money. That has to do with the world. The gym is very far away from my house. And then after you wrote down all the obstacles, you write down the blockbusters. You write down how do you go over those obstacles? How can you reach those concrete landmarks on your way to your goal. Just by doing that, it takes you about 90 minutes to do that. It actually boosts up your hopefulness.
Wow.
And it stays with you between 4 and 5 months. So it stays.
Yeah.
Hope
it sticks.
It sticks. Yeah. Hope sticks. Yeah.
So from an organizational lens, what practical tools or behaviors help embed hope in the culture, right? Are we talking about communication? Are we talking about transparency? What really are we talking about?
In order to give practical tools, it's, you said, from an organizational lens. So let's change the lens a little bit. Okay. Let's look at hope from hopelessness.
Oh, wow. Okay. I hope it's not going to be depressing.
It's not depressing because we're going to get to hope eventually. But if we understand hope from the negative side of hope, from the dark side of the moon, so we understand that hopelessness is based on a psychological construct, which we call learned helplessness. Learned helplessness, that's Martin Seligman, the psychologist who used the conditional dogs. With the dogs, right? So he said learned helplessness, those are people with hopelessness, right? They get passive. They don't want to get out of bed in the morning, okay? So he said learned helplessness is based on three major stations. The first station is uncertainty. We deal here in this podcast about the uncertainty of the world, right?
Right, the disruption.
The disruption of the world. Being long enough in an uncertain environment gets under your skin. Soon enough, you're going to feel what we call loss of trust. You stop believing the environment around you, your bosses, yourself, which is has to do with the crisis of confidence, right? And then soon enough, you're going to lose hope. So we say uncertainty, that's the first station. Loss of trust, that's another station. And the third one is hopelessness. Okay, so if you want to give hope, we have to take this train back.
Like reverse it?
Like reverse the train. Yeah, taking it back, taking it out of the area of hopelessness into the hopeful environment.
So we have to do counteractions.
Exactly. And the counteractions has to work with uncertainty and hopefully with hope. So let's start with practical tools that has to do with uncertainty. What can we do with uncertainty? We have, Ulansky is a social psychologist. He dealt with uncertainty. He wrote a very interesting theme about our need for cognitive closure. And he actually have a scale, the cognitive closure scale. And he says there are five psychological constructs that differ people with high ability to deal with uncertainty that people that cannot deal with uncertainty. The first one is order. Okay. The first one is to give your workers order. And you have to look at your environment, the working environment. How much order do you have there?
And does it serve? Create maybe order for our people, for our employees.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. The second one is predictability. So if you give people predictability, but we give them tool to react to different predictions, that's going to give them a lot of strength. The third one is decisiveness. Decisiveness is our ability to take action in real time. And that's something very important for your worker. You have to give them, we talked about the agency, the ability to have confidence in themselves. You have to give the people the agency to believe in their intuition, to believe.
To follow their intuition.
Follow and to act as they feel in their gut feeling. The fourth one is ambiguity. Sometimes we do not deal very well in ambiguity because our brain is split into left hemisphere and right hemisphere. We think 0-1, we think binary, okay? It's either good or bad, dark or light, okay? We have to understand there's many shades in reality. And for your worker, you have to introduce them to those shades, being a parent to your kids. And the last one, the fifth one is closed-mindedness. Being able to hear different stories, different narratives, different opinions.
Right. Being able to hear and also to provide, no?
Exactly. And to give platform for your worker to actually say what they think. The second stop of this station is about trust. We understand that trust is broken. There's a crisis of trust.
In the world.
Yeah.
And AI is not making it better.
AI is making it much, much worse because this is a global thing. So we have three basic tools that we can rebuild trust. Rebuilding trust, that's something that is fundamentally important to us as human beings. So the first tool to rebuild trust is transparency. Okay, you have to work with your worker, with your coworker, with your bosses in a transparent manner. Every time we see, we believe. The second one is empathy. It has to do with the emotional reaction to people. Empathy is all about rebuilding trust. If I give you solutions, like we usually do in the working place, right? The person comes with a problem, I give him a solution. Solution does not build trust. Empathy builds trust. So we have to stop a little bit on the problem. We have to feel what the other person feels. And then we don't even have to give solutions.
Yeah, just to be there.
Just to be. And the third one is vulnerability. The ability to show my soft.
Oh, that's hard.
That's very hard. Because being a boss is all about knowing stuff, right? But each one of us knows that we don't know a lot. We don't know all of it. And sometimes we are vulnerable because just 2 seconds ago, you stopped the recording and you went to speak with your daughter. That was very vulnerable because my daughter is on the line as well, right? So I can relate to your feeling. And once I relate to your feeling, I can actually trust you because we are the same. So showing your vulnerable spots, that's all about strength. That gives us strength. So that's the second station. Okay, the first one is uncertainty. The second one is trust. And the third one, hopefully, is hope, which we will talk.
Yes, we will. So many leaders, I think this really relates to what we spoke about. They feel that they must be strong, right? That sometimes doubting or showing of emotion is something that would play against building the team, and we must have a knife between our teeth and pull. What would you say to a manager who's worried about leading with hope, right? Because it's uncommon.
It's uncommon. It's like a soft concept, right?
Yes, it's soft. It's naive, maybe. It's unrealistic. Naive.
It's emotional concept, right?
God forbid, yes.
It's emotional. Well, first of all, we have to understand hope is not emotions. That's the first point, I think. Hope is a construct. It's a cognitive construct. We think goal pathways in agency. We start to act in this manner, goal pathways in agency. So first of all, we think, it's a cognitive construct. Then we act, it's a behavioral construct. And only then we feel hope. So the order is reversed. We say hope, we think about feeling hopeful, right?
Right. But there is much more that we know how to do ahead of time.
The feeling comes last in the hope series. Okay? The feeling comes last. First we think, then we act, and only then we really feel hopeful. So that's the first point.
Yeah, it's comforting.
It is. It is because it's a tool. Hope is a tool. It's a working tool. It's not something that hippies have. Okay? So that's the first one. The second one, the narrative of hope, starting speaking hope, say that desperate times call for desperate measures. The word desperate is in there, right? Desperate is being hopelessness, right? This is desperate time. We are in desperate time. Gen AI started to change the whole thing. And people start to lose hope about their career, about their firms, and about reality as a whole, and in the end, about technology. And that's the story of it. Because technology, for the first time in the human being history, technology has overcome us. And now we have to conquer technology before it kills us, right? So desperate times calls for desperate measures. And measures, it's funny because it's called measures because we can measure it. So you can actually measure the hope level of people in those times. And the hope level is going down very steep, very fast.
So as we said, generative AI and its disruption in the workplace, and our season is about guided disruption and what can we do about it and how can we change it? So hope really fits into that, right? Can it be a force that helps guide a disruption rather than swept away?
We call this talk disruption, right? But disruption, being long enough in disruption, which is uncertainty, it leads you to somewhere else. It's not staying as disruption. It becomes desperation. desperate time, call for desperate measures, right? It comes desperation. And then only then it becomes dystopia because the whole world is falling apart in me. We have to understand something very important. This is the root for trauma. And we know a lot about trauma. We know so much about trauma, and we know that 100% of the people will experience trauma in their lifetime. But, which sounds very bad, right?
But a little depressing.
A little depressing, but 65% of those 100%, 65% of the people that will experience trauma will say that the trauma changed their life for the better. And this in psychology is called PTG. PTG, post-traumatic growth. There is a growth in the trauma. Just like I put a seed in the soil and it has to dissolve, has to disappear. It has to be nothing before it becomes a tree. So 65% of the companies, 65% of the workers, 65% of the people that walks on the street right now will experience the trauma as something that they grew up from. They will say this point in life is a changing
point. Yeah, it was a tipping point for them.
It was a tipping point, exactly. So this is something very comforting we say about disruption. Disruption is for the better. It's just something that we have to go through in order to grow up.
Interesting. Do you think that they'll teach hopeful thinking in schools and things like that if the world is continuing in this way?
It's funny because if we knew enough about hope, we can build teaching schools for hope. And that's something that I work on right now as we speak, okay? Building research around hope in the Hope Research Center here in Israel, in Ben Gurion University, to learn about hope. Even though it's a very basic psychological construct, we don't know much to learn about it, which is, I get very hopeful by that.
So one small habit or mindset shift that anyone listening to us can try this week to start leading with a bit of hope in uncertain times.
Well, I wrote down the 10 commandments for hope, and maybe we'll send the 10 commandments for our listeners. And there are 10 tips that we can live a life full of hope. The first one is change your focus. Our brain sees and react and activate on the negative side. It's funny because when we learn emotions, affect as we call it in psychology, we say that negative affect shouts, while positive affect whispers.
Right, it's like a non-event.
It's a non-event, exactly. We remember bad things. And women, by the way, remember bad things much better than men.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
The difference, you can relate to that, yeah. So that's, I don't know if you remember better or you just don't forget.
And
that's
I think
story.
It's both.
It's both, okay. So we have to change our focus. We have to always be thankful and think about the positive. Give them light, more light on the positive side, which has to do with the second commandment, which is practice gratitude on each one small thing that we have in our life. The third one is set clear and achievable personal goals.
Right. The achievable part, I think, is something people must work on, right?
You can dream about being an astronaut, but if you're 50 like I am, I'm not going to be an astronaut. Okay. So you have to have concrete, measurable, and achievable goals. And they don't have to be being an astronaut. They can be losing 10 pounds.
It's as hard as being an astronaut.
Yeah, it's as hard. Yeah, I can relate. I can relate to that right now. Nurture yourself. Nurture yourself both mentally and physically. Do sports, read something. Ensure social support for yourself and for others. If you wake up in the morning and you feel good, if you don't feel good, look for someone you can help.
Yeah, I think that this is why we see so many communities,
exactly.
Also virtual communities, by the way. People feel they need to belong to something.
Mm-hmm. And you have to help somebody else. And that's the funny part about hope. We know hope is a social construct. We learn each other hope. If you are next to a person which is full of hope, you get hopeful yourself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, something contagious. The next one is being in the present, here and now. Even though we think of hope as something futurism, right? We think, we say, I believe tomorrow will be better than today. Okay, but it's not about tomorrow.
It's about now. Today.
It's about here and now. You cannot be hopeful if you're not present, if you're not mindful.
Yeah, this is a big one in the corporate world, I believe, to be present, because we all multitask. And while you're on one call, you do another thing. And to just be present and listen and be heard, that's a big one.
You have to practice it, because as we said before, you have to set goals, right?
Right.
And goals, it's all about the future. But you have to be constantly present at here and now. The next one is embrace failures with compassion. This is called, in psychology, it's called growth mindset. It's all about learning. If you fail, you learn. Okay, so be compassionate with yourself. And that's something very hard for most of us to do. And that's the eighth one, being forgiving towards yourself. If you understand you're on your way and it's a pathway, you have to forgive yourself sometimes. Connect with nature. Nature has a natural environment, has almost
magical.
Yeah. You just have to see a plant growth, or go to the forest, or see the circle of life. Okay. And you will get hopeful just by being there in the field, in the forest, wherever you are. Go out in nature. Or you can have nature in your house.
Bring nature.
Yeah. Just buy a plant, a small plant, and see.
Or an animal.
Yeah. See how that gives you a lot of hope. And the 10th one is practice small random acts of kindness to other people. Soon enough, you'll be kindful
for yourself.
And I did, several years ago, I did a research on the psychology of presence. We give presents for each other. And the most beautiful part is that people start to talk about giving presents for themselves. They went to the shopping mall and they bought a shirt. And they don't say, I bought a shirt for myself. I bought a present for myself. That was so kindful to think of it. Not in the practical way, but in the emotional kindness way. And we have to be kind to ourselves.
So what can I say, Tomer? Thank you so much. I think you reframed hope for us, not only as relevant, but essential. And to almost end this season, after we've been through all the disruptions, we scared ourselves, we brought ourselves back, we looked at all the complexities, and it's refreshing and it's hopeful for myself and I think for our listeners. So if you want to learn more, check out Dr. Tomer Bakalash's work on tomerbakalash.com and stay with us for more conversations here on Guided Disruption in the Workplace. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Live amazing. Do amazing.